Hey, it's John Canzano. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe. And thanks to all the listeners and all of our sponsors who help make the Bald-Faced Truth the number one sports radio show in Portland. Enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. John Canzano.
People don't like to hear the truth all the time. You know, people ask you questions, but they don't actually necessarily want to hear the answers.
Love him.
I mean, I like the guy. I listen to him every day.
Canzano, what's going on, man?
He's dead sexy.
I think he does a damn good job.
I'm going to be rooting for this young Portland team, which, you know, is a terrific team. You guys just have a terrific nucleus.
You pay attention to detail. That's why you're so successful.
I just think he's honest. Straightforward and to the point.
You're bringing up something that's probably the average sports fan watching the game didn't pick up on.
I'm really glad to see that someone who speaks their mind is not afraid to tell it how it is.
He's a smart guy, just my dude, man. Yeah, I know him, man.
I let my mother listen to him.
Hate him.
You don't want to get nobody a second chance. Trump.
To represent that as some sort of subterfuge by John Canzano, I would have expected far better.
He just sounds like an egotistical idiot.
He was rude, crude, and wrong.
Love to hate him.
Yo, John, I can't stand you. I can't stand you, but I come back every day to listen to the show.
Bald-faced truth teller.
Who is he to judge?
Well, he can raise your eyebrows a lot.
I was angry. He just got my feathers that day big time.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
I'm still not worried or concerned that Zach Collins is going to make me look dumb. I said after the Blazers picked him that I thought he had a chance several years down the road to, as we look back on drafts. And we do that. We like to do that. We redraft years later. NBA GMs redraft years later. I've had multiple GMs tell me, hey, let's hold that draft again and see who goes 1, 2, 3, 4. But Zach Collins has not been good in summer league. And then on his right leg, he's got a right quad issue, a contusion. It ends his summer league, his third summer league game. 4 points, 4 rebounds, 3 turnovers in 11 minutes. He doesn't know if he got hit or if he pulled something. And a lot of Blazer fans slapping their foreheads going, well, of course he did. Of course he got hurt. It's what big men do when they come to Portland. And I don't want to get caught up on, is it the water? Is it big men? Is it what is it? But I guess what I want to know from you in this summer league action, which is relatively meaningless, outside of maybe, hey, we want to keep guys healthy, see how they play together, get a chance to see them break a sweat. Can you draw any conclusions based on what you've seen so far from the Trailblazers in this summer league and the draft and the summer, while the rest of the NBA goes on as if it's operating on by different rules? Carmelo Anthony, the Knicks, the Rockets talking about a 4-team deal that would possibly land Carmelo Anthony in Houston. And the Blazers, big man Caleb Swanigan and Zach Collins. Your impressions of those guys. I want to know what you got so far out of this summer. We've got a great radio show. We're going to talk some baseball with a columnist at the Washington Post who had a great column up last night's game saying that everything that you needed from baseball was in the All-Star game, except the buy-in from baseball that would allow players to be human. Think about that. I think one of the great things over the years in watching local athletes has been getting to know the local athletes a little bit. Marcus Mariota, watching him come off the field after losing to Arizona his sophomore year. And we go, man, it was a disappointing loss. He's got nothing to come back for. And here he stops to sign autographs with kids. It's been those kinds of experiences in Damon Stoudemire and Brian Grant and other Blazer players over the years and Ducks and Beavers. And when we used to bring Jaquizz Rodgers on and do quiz. It was a great segment of radio. He was a freshman at Oregon State. And part of the beauty of radio in the interviews of the show is you get to know these guys just a little bit. And Major League Baseball, while it's got some really good young players, and baseball in particular, is not conducive to, hey, me first, let me be a personality, let me showboat a little bit, let me stand out from the others the way that the NBA and the NFL often does and gets criticized for. But we criticize the NFL every time a player jumps up after making a tackle, hopping around like they just won the Super Bowl. We criticize them when they catch a pass and they jump up signaling first down. We criticize them when there's a sack dance and we go, and then we say, let them celebrate. Come on, what's wrong with that? No fun league. But the byproduct of that is that you get to know the players a little bit. You get to know their personalities a little bit. And Major League Baseball, until last night, really, where you saw a selfie getting taken at home plate, hasn't really allowed itself to be human. It hasn't fostered the kind of atmosphere that would allow a baseball player to stand out in the way that Steph Curry stands out. And part of that is the code of baseball and baseball in general. It's not about me. It's about my team. It takes a team. And the minute you stand out, flipping the bat, running too slow in a home run trot, showboating, what happens? Chin music. The game, the league, is that part of the problem with baseball and not allowing players to be human? We'll talk about that coming up later on the show. Plus, Dale Murphy will be with us, a 7-time Major League Baseball All-Star, a 2-time National League MVP, a guy who got 5 gold gloves and 4 silver slugger awards and did not get into the Hall of Fame. He got my Hall of Fame vote, and I've got a Hall of Fame vote, and I've got a Heisman vote. He got my Hall of Fame vote, and he did not get into the Hall of Fame. We're going to talk to Dale Murphy about that. We're going to talk to Dale Murphy about the All-Star Game and the Braves of the 1980s as the Braves sort of rose to become America's team in baseball. Why hasn't that helped Dale Murphy? And can he talk at all about the idea of personality being part of what drives a sport? 503-417-7575 is the phone number. If you want to weigh in on Zach Collins, is he going to make me look smart or dumb for saying he was a good pick at number 10? What have you seen so far that you're excited or encouraged about or discouraged about? And then the second thing is about sort of the formation of a superstar athlete. What are the ingredients? What is the formula for fostering an athlete to rise above all others and become a personality that is a superstar? Is it simply about talent, or is there something else in there? As this discussion about who's going to be the face of baseball continues, I wonder if that sport itself will allow anybody to be its face. By nature, baseball is a team sport. By nature, guys are penalized if they stand out, if they show, but oh, he flipped the bat. Oh, he trotted too slow on the home run. Like in football, basketball, that stuff's encouraged. Look how different Steph Curry is. He's chewing on his mouthpiece. He's flipping up threes from 35 feet. He's behind the back pass. It's showboat. It's flashy. And kids all think it's cool. College football's got an element of that, too, with all the uniforms and the foot. But tell me, as we look at baseball and we go, okay, do they have a face? Is it even possible that baseball, the atmosphere of baseball, could create a true face of the game? Because when you look back at history, you got fat guys, home run hitters, Babe Ruth, Mark McGwire, Barry Bonds, not a fat guy, but a home run hitter. And it's all about what they did and where they hit the ball and how far they hit and how many home runs they hit, or how many championships they won. It isn't necessarily about, man, that guy had great personality. And across other sports, we do see the ingredients or the formula for creating and fostering a superstar personality that it's got a little bit of personality in there. Muhammad Ali in the boxing ring, there was not a greater trash talker. Don't give me Floyd Mayweather either. Muhammad Ali was the greatest trash talker of all time and the greatest boxer possibly of all time. And part of that was he was successful in the ring. But the other part of that was he could talk it. He was young. He was talented. He was good looking. And this was a guy who could be the face of boxing. And I wonder in baseball, is this a sport that's got young, talented players that are not allowed to be people?
I don't like fighters who talk too much.
Well, Henry Cooper's nothing but a tramp. He's a bum. I'm the world's greatest. He must fall in 5 rounds, but if you talk about me, I'll cut it 3. I'll never fight another fella as tough as Doug Jones, not even that big, ugly Barry Sonny Liston.
Is he your next fight?
Well, after I annihilate this Henry Cooper, I want that bear.
And what's going
to
happen to him?
I want him bad.
What's going to happen to him?
He might be great, but he'll fall in eight. I'm the prettiest fight in the ring today. That's my label.
Shut up, man. I want you quiet.
I'm too fast. Round five. No special training. Just be at the fight. I'm ready to back up everything I'm saying. And I'm through talking.
Is this...
The man to beat me haven't been born yet. Well, I'll tell Henry Cooper, if he's watching this show, to come to the fight and be ready to fight. Because I'm coming to get you. I'm coming to London to get you. And after I'm through beating him, I think he'll have to join the Beatles and be a singer.
This will be Buster's last stand. Joe Frazier's in trouble. Because the Muhammad Ali Joe Frazier's going to meet is going to be better than the Muhammad Ali he met 3 years ago.
All people watching this interview, I'm seriously trying to get Joe Frazier and George Foreman in one night and to go down as the greatest fight of all time. Some of them still have doubt. They're making excuses. I want to whoop both of these men in one night, and I'll have a record that nobody can touch.
Notice he didn't come to Zaire. He didn't come to Indonesia. He didn't come to Manila. He didn't come to Malaysia because he knows he will get in trouble over here in this country because they don't like people like him over here. And all I got to do is get the word, and we'll bump him off.
Muhammad Ali was the greatest trash talker of all time and maybe invented the way that athletes trash talk today. But I'm not saying you have to be a trash talker. I'm not saying you have to be disrespectful. There was part of Ali's delivery that was humorous. He was rhyming, he was rapping, he was talking, he was poking fun at him, he was calling him ugly, he was saying how good looking he was. But you look at today's baseball player, you can't even look at the pitcher. Guy hits you, you run down to first base, you look over at the mound, there's a fight. Somebody's getting hit. In the NBA, we've got trash talk. In the NFL, there's trash talk to an extent. You tell me how much of baseball's issue is that baseball itself is not conducive to allowing these guys to be people. 503-417-7575. Mike's in Vancouver. Mike, welcome back.
Hey, John. Good to hear you. I have a personal story. The first baseman for the Mariners about 10 years ago, I know you know who he is. So they're clients of mine, and I was talking with his wife one day, and I don't know how the subject came up, but she said, you have no idea how sensitive some of these guys are, and the criticism really hurts them. And I mean, they have real feelings. So they don't go deaf when somebody criticizes him because he strikes out, you know, on a low slider because he's 6'8". You know, it's really unfair. I mean, you know, put yourself in their shoes. Like, yeah, he's making $10 million a year, but, you know, I mean, that's really irrelevant. I mean, they get their feelings hurt.
And I think that, you know, we're talking about two different things there, but it's a great point. Like, in even our interview we did with Myers Leonard, the first interview that he does coming out of the offseason, into the offseason, as he's going down to Los Angeles, is done on this show. And I had sat down with Myers Leonard the day after the season ended. I met him for coffee. We sat down. He walks into the coffee shop. We're out at Bridgeport Village. He walks into the coffee shop. He's 7 feet tall. That walks into the room with him. All right. It's not like he can walk in and people aren't going to notice Myers Leonard's in the room. He walks into Pete's Coffee. We're out at Bridgeport Village. And the lady behind the counter is like blushing and going, oh, my gosh, this is Myers Leonard. Oh, he's a basketball player. Other people in the room, though, there was kind of a murmur going on behind him and people going, oh, there's Leonard. He's a bum. Oh, that guy can't play, that kind of stuff. So he gets his coffee. I get my coffee. We go down. Like that, if you've ever been to that coffee shop, it's got this long hallway that kind of leads like to the restrooms. There's a table that's like nearest the restrooms. It's kind of out of eyesight and it's back tucked away. And he chose that table. And then he chose the seat that put his back to the rest of the room. And I thought to myself when he did that, that whether things are going good or bad for Myers Leonard, it must be terribly distracting to be an athlete who has to walk into the room And everybody's going to want to come over and talk to him or talk about him or say that he put himself in the least recognizable position in the room. And I said to him, how's your Twitter feed looking? And he said, man, it's brutal. And then he proceeded to talk about some of the stuff that he talked about on the show. How awful some people are when things are going right. People telling him he should go die. People telling him he should quit the game. People blaming him for the money that he got from the Blazers. And his wife does a really good job of insulating him and telling him, hey, step away from it, man. You're one of the best people in the world at what you do. Why should you sit out here and have to take the criticism for that? But the answer really is in what that caller said, that when you are making that money on that stage with eyeballs on you, with the expectations that are there, when you make mistakes, when you don't perform, you're going to catch hell for it. It's human nature. The line that I draw is that I don't think that that criticism should be personal. I don't think that criticism should include your family members. I don't think that criticism should include death threats or bodily harm or people wishing that you would get hurt or people. I mean, to me, it's like if, as a fan, if you're disappointed that somebody didn't perform, take a look at yourself. Like if you're that disappointed that somebody didn't perform and you're going to go out and be like, hey, this person should go crawl in a hole somewhere and die. I always, when I see tweets like that from people who are directed at athletes or other people on a stage, including yours truly, I always think, what is wrong in that person's life? What is missing in that person's life? Who didn't they get love from? Who didn't put their arm around them? What bit of common sense missed them? Because I think it's a like Twitter, and I've said this over and over, I don't think Twitter makes you dumber. I don't think social media makes you dumber. What I think social media does, because you don't have an editor and you don't have somebody standing there before you hit post who says, I don't know if that's a good idea. You're on your own for the most part on social media. So I don't think it makes you dumber. What I think it does is it allows dumb people to be exposed. So if you are missing compassion, missing empathy, missing basic intelligence, if you can't spell, for example, and you haven't learned to spell words and you're on Twitter, you're in trouble. If you're not somebody who's got common sense, intuition, or a conscience, Twitter will expose you. Social media will expose you because it's right now. There's no safety net. And that's what I think to that caller's point, like even, you know, 10 years ago when people were criticizing others on the internet and other places and fans booing or whatever, boo if you'd like. But I just wonder, like, at what point, if, like, I'm hanging out at your job, like at the 7-Eleven, or if you're a bus driver, I'll sit in the second seat right behind you or whatever, and I'll just sit there and go, boo, over your shoulder. And you go, and I go, hey, you're making the money. It's your job. I'm just disappointed with your performance. Like, I'm wondering at what point, like, we all just kind of recognize, hey, man, this is kind of going too far. 503-417-7575. I will give away Mariners tickets on today's show as well.
This is the Bald-Faced Truth.
It's been a while since I've been at a baseball game as a fan. I like going to baseball games as a fan. I like being there in person. I like the pace of the game when I'm in the stadium. I don't like the pace of the game, though, when I'm watching baseball on television. Or football, for that matter. Let's not give football a pass. But the NBA has done something that I think is an improvement to the game. And the Board of Governors of the NBA, which the code name for the Board of Governors, by the way, are all the owners. That's the owners. They call themselves the Board of Governors. We should have done that in radio. We should have thought of that first. If you're a radio show host, you're on the Board of Governors. The Board of Governors here at this radio station has determined that the Board of Governors in the NBA have dropped 4 timeouts during the game in an effort to speed up the game. They're recognizing, hey, this is something we can do. NBA games are about to get faster. The Board of Governors have approved a rule that will decrease the number of timeouts per game from 18 to 14. They have also okayed a rule that would limit timeouts in the last 2 minutes of the game to two per team, down from three per team. Now, I tweeted about this during the postseason and during last NBA season, how awful it is to watch an NBA game in the last 2 minutes of the game because it's inbound, run a play, timeout. Foul, get the rebound, timeout. It's this foot race that is like a sprint for like 35, 40 minutes. Then the last couple minutes of the game turns into this free throw shooting contest that is only helped, aided by the fact that there are a bunch of timeouts left. So the rule then, 7 timeouts per game, no restrictions per half. And by the way, a full timeout used to be 90 seconds, and the 20-second timeout was 60 seconds. That makes no sense. We need a 20. That gives you 60. Now, though, both will be replaced with a 75-second team timeout. And the trade deadline, by the way, that is usually the Thursday after the All-Star game, will now be a Thursday 10 days before the All-Star game. More in the middle of the season, which makes sense to me. Fewer stoppages, less time with the action at the end of the game. And in the last 2 minutes of the game, you only have 2 timeouts that you can use. In the last 2 minutes. It used to be 3. And their goal is to improve the fan experience, which means their goal is to serve the customer. So while we're changing that rule for the NBA, and I asked this in all seriousness, is there another rule you'd like to see changed? Would you like to see the NFL adopt a similar policy with timeouts? Coaches will not like this because coaches love to control the last couple minutes of the game. Basketball coaches are control freaks. They'll admit it. Basketball coaches will tell you they're control freaks. Just watch how basketball coaches, even on the youth level, run practices. Right? It's Christmas vacation. Who's practicing? Basketball teams. And for how long? Forever, because they got full access to the gym. Basketball coaches love control. And they want to matter in a game that's up and down. So they may not like this. And teams that are good coming out of timeouts, historically, may not like this. But I do like it because it's going to speed up the game. And in the last couple minutes, I don't want to see a bunch of guys calling timeouts and shooting free throws. I want to see action. What would you do to make the game better? 503-417-7575. I had a predicament yesterday, and I talked about it openly. It's a very personal issue. We've got a bunch of family visiting next week. And we've got like 13 or 16 family members coming into town. Camp Exceptional's going on, the BFT Foundation summer camp, and everybody's helping out with that. So it becomes a big family reunion centered around our house, which is awesome. And I called my brother today. He and his family and family of 5, they're on the road driving from California. They're driving up. Sister's flying in with her 2 kids. My parents, my dad was and mom were getting ready to drive. They're bringing their dog with them. I'm like, whoa. How would you like to be on the road for like 10 hours with your dog? So the bottom line then is they mentioned to me that they wanted to go to the Timbers game. And then I got online and found out, like, it's impossible to get 13 tickets to a Timbers game. Like, in one area? Are you kidding me? I found 10 in one section. And then I mentioned it on yesterday's show, and I half expect that some of you out there heard me talking about the fact that I needed to get tickets, and you went out and said, oh, that's a good thing. I should go see a game next Wednesday. And you all bought tickets, because I got online after the show, and those 10 tickets were gone. Somebody bought them. So I had a problem. I have solved that problem because my problem of needing 13 tickets went away. And the problem became I needed 16 tickets because 3 more people said they wanted to go. So I needed 16 tickets, all relatively in the same area, and I was able to secure 16 tickets using the black market, shady meetings in parking garages, back channeling, and I did find 16 tickets that set me back a pretty penny. so that everybody can go to the game next Wednesday night. Now, you know what'll happen? Everybody will roll into town. It'll be Wednesday. The camp will be going on. People will go swimming after the camp. And they'll go, you know, do we really need to go to the game tonight? And I'm like, you get yourself in the car. We're going to the soccer game. Or match, as soccer people will correct me. But that is going to happen. Which brings me to the subject of our Mariners ticket giveaway. And I try to give back on the show all the time. I give back to the listeners of the show constantly. It's like a one-way thing. I just give and give and give. But here it is. The Bronx Bombers are visiting Safeco Field July 20th through the 23rd. That's the Yankees. There's no better way to spend a summer night at the ballpark. So call right now for your chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Mariners take on the Yankees on Saturday, July 22nd. You can buy tickets at Mariners.com. But we will take caller number, Adriana, what would you like to have? Caller number 10. Caller number 10. At 503-417-7575. She's already on the phone with caller number one. Sorry, too quick. Jump the gun. You tell me if you want the tickets. I'm giving back. And if you have 16 in your family, too bad. I've only got two. I got a pair of tickets for you to go to the game. You talk about an impossible task. I feel like I just pulled off the triple Lindy. I just long jumped 30 feet. I just ran a 330 mile. 16 tickets to see the Timbers at Providence Park. Do you know the waiting list? Like, they don't. The people who have said, hey, let's go to the Timbers game on Wednesday. They don't know the waiting list. It is an impossible feat. I just got a perfect 10. And I paid for it out the nose. But I'm telling you that it is possible. All things are possible, as my grandfather used to say. The difficult, he can do. The impossible, takes him a little time. The phone lines are jammed with people wanting the tickets. We'll give those away. I hope that you get some personality out of the ball player. But Major League Baseball should look at what the NBA did and look at what the NBA is when it comes to fostering pace of game. That's good. You know, I'm sitting at NBA games, I get bored. Watching NBA games, I get bored in the last couple minutes. And I watch a lot of NBA games. And I think removing a couple of few timeouts, four timeouts, come on, that's awesome. Seven per team, that's plenty. You don't need seven timeouts. And people will be like, that's the strategy of the game. That's not the strategy of the game. Like, I don't think that James Naismith was sitting there with the peach basket going, all right, here's the game of basketball. You got to dribble it. You can pass it. You get 2 points for a bucket. Put the ball in the peach basket. You get a couple points. And we're going to have seven timeouts in the last 2 minutes of the game. And we're going to figure out which team could shoot free throw betters. All right, break. That's not what he did. He came up with a game in that PE class where he said, hey, this is a good game. Multiple people can participate. It's got a lot of action. It's up and down. I like it. I like what he was doing there. Major League Baseball, pay attention to that. Because there have been some good advancements in Major League Baseball, like replay, I think, in Major League Baseball, oddly, is one that has helped because I think you get some calls in Major League Baseball that, hey, people like to see a call made right. But the problem with Major League Baseball, in part, is that when you're watching the game on television and it goes 3 hours and 16 minutes, that's your average Major League game, 3:16. That's too long by about 30 minutes. So what do you do if you're baseball? It's too long for a couple reasons. It's too long because that is a huge investment of time for people to sit down and block out and go, I'm going to watch this game start to finish. But it's also too long because the game lacks personality. We're going to have a guest coming up, Washington Post columnist, who has written a column out of the All-Star game that is dead solid perfect about the lack of personality and the way that baseball sort of inhibits that entertainment value that you need if you're going to invest 30, 60, 90, or 3 hours and 16 minutes of your personal time following a game, following a sport. You know, 7 million people watched the Home Run Derby. And you know what? The Home Run Derby had a little pop in it. People liked it. It was exciting.
Go! 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 Go You got 7 seconds.
Oh, he did it.
He got it.
He did it with 5 seconds to go.
Now, I'm not growing up. Lady called in yesterday claiming, I guess, that we were being juvenile. If you hear that clip and you hear people... That's just a little personality. It was entertaining. People were excited to see home runs. It had a climax to it. You know, it wasn't just ball low outside. It was, wow, look at how deep that is. It's crazy. He's got 7 seconds. It's the money ball. Awesome. The Home Run Derby kind of like, oh, maybe it'll awaken baseball. I don't know if you've ever seen a 500-foot home run, but if you were watching Aaron Judge hit a 513-foot home run, that was baseball delivering. And I wonder if baseball will get it. I wonder if the All-Star game and maybe the fun that came out of that, well, baseball will go, hey, look, we've got to be more fun. We've got to be more engaging. Our players have got to be allowed to have fun, have personality, be relatable. And I'm not talking about roping in young viewers. I'm just talking about roping in viewers. Nobody wants to see a bunch of robots play a game. I don't want to watch a video game of baseball playing against itself. Nobody sits and watches that. It's, you know, you're walking by, like, you know, I've walked through a park and people are sitting and playing chess. I don't know if there's a less entertaining viewing experience than sitting and watching two people play chess. But I will look over. And if the people are eccentric and interesting, I'm more inclined to slow and watch what's going on in the game. Even though I don't understand chess that much, or I don't play. I understand it, but I don't play. But if you've got a computer playing chess against another computer, does anybody want to watch that? And it's in part, I think, baseball's problem is wrapped up in baseball not being a sport that has entertainers. Maybe since, if you go back to Satchel Paige, if you go back to old-time baseball, barnstorming teams, I had the great fortune of being in Kansas City and going to the Negro League Hall of Fame. And if you're ever in Kansas City, please stop in there, because it's not only a part of American history and baseball, but it's like the history of the culture of America. And it explains so much about, you know, here was Negro League baseball that had incredible talent like Satchel Paige, like Josh Gibson. It had incredible venues. They were playing in real stadiums, and they were drawing crowds in the 20,000s. But much of their game, because it was in competition with Major League Baseball, became about entertaining. And it wasn't like the stiff, rigid, don't show anybody up. And I'm not talking about baseball needs to be classless. I'm talking about baseball needs to find a personality. Because I think when you look at the NFL, you know that there's personality out there. And I think that's part of it for me. Like, I love the personality in the game. And I hate, like, you know, we saw a play a couple years ago at the University of Oregon where, you know, there was a sack in a big game, in a big situation. And the guy got up from making the sack, and he did what NFL players do when they have a sack in a game. He just made a gesture. And I believe it was Tony Washington Jr. who had the sack. Made the gesture, and the official flagged him for it. And I thought to myself, my goodness, do we just not want them to be people? Like, I get it, that's a rule, the kid probably should have known any better. But, like, isn't that official in that situation, looking at the sack and the moment and the crowd? And is he supposed to sack the quarterback in front of 48,000 people and then quietly put his hands to his side and jog to the sideline? Act like you've been there before, is what we say, which is just code for get off my lawn. I, you know, I'm not about like I didn't get into the Sharpie and T.O. I didn't get into Joe Horn on the phone, but I'd rather have that than the sterile NFL, Major League Baseball. Like, isn't the beauty in soccer? After a goal, the backflip, the slide on the knees. Isn't there something like I'm not a soccer fan, but you tell me, I'm watching a person who is celebrating a rare accomplishment. He scored a goal. Brandi Chastain ripping her jersey off in a sports bra, pumping fists, showing her guns. Like, love that. Love the expression, human expression. And that's so much of what sport is about. And I think baseball could learn something from the NBA. Like, the NBA can be nauseating because it is Damian Lillard, Inc., James Harden, Incorporated, Steph Curry, Incorporated, Kevin Durant, LeBron James. It's fill in the name of the bank of the player, Incorporated. I get news releases that are just absurd. Damian Lillard has announced a new partnership. Damian, known as, a.k.a. Dame Dalla. It's like, I get it, but maybe that's a little too much. All I'd like from baseball is a nice smile. Kirk Gibson pumping his fist, running around the base. Like Pete Rose, you can look at Pete Rose and you can go, he was a scumbag, he was a cheater, he probably bet on baseball and can't be trusted. And but you know what? He was a personality. Charlie Hustle had a personality. There was something to him. And I think what we're left with right now in baseball is, hey, don't flip the bat when you hit a home run. Put your head down and run around the bases. And I get it. It's the code of baseball. And purists will say, hey, baseball's this great game, whatever. It's just, but I don't need these guys to be robots. I need them to start being people. And I hope Aaron Judge figures that out. As, you know, Jeff Passan was on yesterday's show, the Yahoo sports columnist who just does a great job covering baseball. And he's talking about Aaron Judge and what a great kid he is. I want to know that. I want to see that. I hope baseball realizes that the secret to success isn't just hitting a bunch of home runs. It's looking across at other sports and going, all right, what makes the NFL interesting and makes it a great watch? And guess what? The NBA, the league sucks. Okay, the league sucks. The fact that not many teams can win sucks. Free agency sucks. The salary structure sucks. It's a bad thing. Like, it's broken in so many ways. It is a big lie, all right, the NBA. But you know what the NBA has? Maybe it's the only thing it does have. It's got personality. It's got players. It's got authenticity within that. And you know what? There's some entertainment value in watching the NBA for that reason alone. And maybe that's the secret to its success. And if you took Rob Manfred and you said, Rob, we're going to switch you. We're going to make you the commissioner of the NBA. You're going to institute the culture and cold of baseball in the NBA. Guys are going to keep their head down. They're going to make a layup, run back to the other side without saying a word. I don't think anybody would watch. We'd be done with it. I'm just keeping it real. I need some personality in my sports because I have people playing those sports. Coming up, we'll talk to a columnist at the Washington Post who I think is going to hammer that point. Plus, Dale Murphy, seven-time Major League Baseball All-Star, still in front of us.
Something is about to happen.
BFT.
Now listen up, everyone.
Let's go. The bald-faced truth.
John Canzano.
I gotta say, I love him most of the time. I think he's right on.
He's okay.
John's great.
He's a little unusual.
Live every afternoon, 12 to 3 p.m.
I hate that guy because he just never knows what he's talking about.
I think he does a damn good job.
That's my dude, man. Yeah, I know him, man. I let my mother listen to him.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
John's waterproofing. That is the waterproofing company that I've used, we used them in a rental house. We had a rental house that had water. The backyard was wet. The under the house had some standing water. I didn't like the smell inside of it. It was a musty, moldy smell. So we used John's waterproofing, had them come out. They encapsulated the crawl space. It's a great company. They offer financing. They offer, you know, they can give you a free estimate on everything that's going on. And if you have an issue, anything with your crawl space, your basement, you know, you want to waterproof things, you've got standing water, you can go to bettercrawlspaces.com to check out what John's Waterproofing can do for you. You can also just give them a call if you'd like. And if you want to, you can tell them that Canzano sent you. I think that would be helpful to you and also helpful to us. But if John's Waterproofing is essentially the company from Eugene to Portland to Vancouver, anywhere, Salem, Beaverton, greater Portland area, all the way down to those listening on our BFT radio network in Eugene, you can call them at 877-526-8141. That's 877-526-8141, or go to bettercrawlspaces.com. Our next guest, Barry Svrgula. I practiced that. I practiced it, and I did it perfect, and then I get on air, and I don't do it. Svrgula. Damn it, Barry.
Better than a row.
I'm sorry, Barry. I butchered that after practicing it.
Nice try. You're not the first or the last.
I know, but I, out of respect for you, I had practiced and practiced and said, I want to get this right. This guy's a great columnist. He wrote a great column in the Washington Post. For people who haven't read it, off the All-Star Game, it was the best thing written. Barry, thank you for making time.
Appreciate it, John. Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about baseball's issue with its face. I love that you went in search of, like, an answer on this one. What, first of all, prompted you to write the column?
Well, it's honestly kind of a long-running discussion I've had with Bryce Harper, who, you know, not everybody loves and not everybody feels like handles himself as a baseball player should, or how baseball players are used to being taught how to kind of demure and shun the spotlight and keep your head down while you're around the bases, don't flip your bat and all that kind of stuff. And Bryce's point from a very young age, and I think that's part of what some people found off-putting about it, was that he was doing it at a young age, is that the sport itself has done a poor job of marketing its stars. You know, we know how the NBA does this, and this is, you know, if it's a Christmas Day game, it's as much LeBron versus Steph as it is Cavs versus Warriors. MLB, I mean, there's some things about baseball that make it harder to put the stars at the forefront, but I also think there are some constraints, and Bryce kind of shares this feeling. There are constraints that are self-inflicted that, you know, kind of some traditions about the game and how players handle themselves that make it hard for their players to really have their flair understood and appreciated and celebrated, rather than, hey man, why did you do that? You know, you're showing up the pitcher, you're attracting attention to yourself. Please stop. That's not how baseball handles things. I think there's a weird kind of in-between area there that baseball has to grapple with.
We're talking to Washington Post columnist Barry Svrgula.
Nicely done.
I see. I'll get better. I intentionally came right back to that. Barry, do these guys want to be the face of baseball? As you talk to Clayton Kershaw or Harper or Adam Judge, do they want that spotlight?
Well, I think that's part of it. I mean, Mike Trout is actually the perfect example. I think he's pretty much undisputed as the best player in the game right now. He's got five full seasons in. His MVP finishes in those five seasons are 2-2, 1-2, 1. And he's only 25. So here you have a guy who should be out in front in every marketing campaign, in everything that the sport says about itself. And he kind of actively wants no part of it. He kind of almost takes pride in being boring. That is not unique in baseball to Mike Trout. It certainly doesn't apply to Harper. But, I mean, I think there are a lot more guys like that who kind of shun the individual spotlight than embrace it. And the odd thing is, I think the culture of baseball is still, after all this time, that if you do embrace kind of a spotlight on yourself, on an individual celebration, on Jose Bautista's bat flip in Toronto a couple postseasons ago, you're shunned. And that's not supposed to be how you act. So in a culture where we're used to being able to, you know, go to YouTube or click on a GIF or a GIF or whatever it is and see the flair and see kind of an instant repeated 5-second version of what's the most exciting thing I saw today, baseball downplays all that and therefore risks cutting off a generation that really celebrates that kind of stuff.
Is it more likely that you get slow changes because it's a culture you're talking about and you get small things like the Bautista bat flip and you get players who maybe are relax a little bit into it, or can that be something that baseball says, hey, next off season, let's try to have more fun? Let's, you know, is that something that can come top down, or does it have to be a culture shift?
Yeah, I think it's a culture shift. I think it's a slow one. This is a sport that is pretty slow to accept change, and often the change doesn't come from within. It's from outside pressures, and then the sport realizes, hey, you know, maybe we should do something about this. And this is, you know, this is a nebulous thing. This isn't a rule change or something like that. This is basically how are kids who are good players, how are they taught to play the game the correct way, to be fundamentally sound, to improve themselves as players, but also kind of walk that tightrope where they're allowed to show emotion and bring some attention to themselves, not in a inappropriate way, but in a way that celebrates what they've done for their team. Rob Manfred, the commissioner, yesterday was asked about Aaron Judge being the face of baseball, the new face of baseball. And obviously there's a lot of appeal there because, you know, he plays in New York. He plays for the most iconic franchise, the Yankees. They have a young core that is on the rise. The most media is there. It's a baseball town. He's kind of in the perfect spot. And Manfred, in the next breath, saying after he said, you know, this guy could be one of those face of baseball type people, he said, but a lot of baseball guys don't like that, don't want it. And I think that's just an odd place for a sport to be in, a sport that is healthy in so many ways. It's a $10 billion industry, but is very aware of the demographics of their hardcore fan. They skew older. They've got to figure out a way to bring along younger viewers, younger participants, and it's hard to see how they can do that without allowing a little more freedom and a little more celebration, a little more flair among the best players in the game.
Barry Sferluga is our guest, Washington Post columnist. He's got a great column in the Washington Post about baseball having fun and having a little personality. The fact that the game didn't count for anything, you've got Nelson Cruz at home plate with the selfie, Harper running around with that mane of hair in the outfield. I mean, it felt more fun. Was that a good development that it didn't count for something?
I'd flip it around. I think it was a good development that it didn't count for something, not necessarily because it freed the players up, although it did, but because it was a stupid construct to begin with, that something is set up as an exhibition and, you know, you've got guys on last place teams who are going to impact whether a teammate from a first place team has home field advantage in the World Series or not. I mean, that was just silly from the get-go. I talked to a lot of players in the clubhouse afterwards last night about whether it changed how they felt about the game. And they said, no, you know, I didn't notice it during it. It definitely helped the managers get more players in. They didn't have to hold players back in case there was a 15-inning game and we need to make sure we have an extra infielder, an extra outfielder, protect the pitchers, all that kind of stuff. But it did. The Nelson Cruz selfie is exactly the kind of thing that I feel like, you know, like Joe West, the umpire, was almost aghast. Like, how could this be happening in this very formal arrangement? And I've umpired all these years, and I've never seen such a thing. Well, put all that aside. Like, that was fun. It was cool. He handed the phone to Yadier Molina. They took this picture. It's the kind of thing that that baseball has, as I keep using the word shun, but it's turned its back on that kind of impromptu fun or even planned fun for years. Why not allow it on that sort of stage in a game that is a celebration of so many talented players?
You've covered baseball a long time, and I say that you hear NBA beat writers that will say that the NBA schedule and pace is the worst, but you wrote a book called The Grind, which is a great book. And for people, if you haven't checked this out, it was on the Penn ESPN Award for Literary Sports Writing, and it's a great read on the pace of the game and the long season. Some need to be done about the length of the season, or do you find that, like, look, this is history, we'd have to change records? And what did you learn writing that book?
Well, I mean, a lot of things, and I appreciate you bringing it up. One, I don't think they're going to move from 162 games, and we can say it's because about the romance of the record book and all that kind of stuff. The truth of the matter is, you know, if you reduce the number of games, that reduces the amount of inventory in a television contract. It reduces the gate at for every home team. It reduces the money that pumps into the sport. And, you know, Manfred was very frank when this was more a front burner topic. Listen, if we're going to decrease revenue voluntarily, then we're going to decrease salaries because one follows the other. So I think that's been pushed back. What has been tackled in the last CBA negotiations is a little bit of more I mean, I think it's not a stretch to call it a little more humane scheduling. There will be a lot more beginning next year. There are a lot more rules in place that, look, you can't when a team has to travel two time zones, you can't start a game at 7 p.m., have them get on a plane at 12:30 or 1 in the morning, travel a four-hour flight, and then play the next day. You have to have a getaway day time. There are ways to loosen things up a little bit so that these guys aren't walking zombies. It really, it sounds silly, and these complaints, if they can be called complaints, kind of fall on deaf ears a lot, because people immediately respond with, well, I mean, they're making $10 million a year. What do they have to complain about? It affects their ability to perform at their best when their head hits the pillow at 5 a.m. and they've got to be at the park at 2 p.m. That's just a fact of life. It's a fact of human physiology that you can't just do that over and over and over again and be at your peak physical performance. So it'll be interesting to see what impact those changes next year have on the quality of play.
I think you have a unique perspective in that, you know, you had the Expos in 2005 who go to Washington, D.C., and Portland was kind of the other suitor in that debate. What has the Expos moving to D.C. done for Washington and baseball?
Well, I mean, I think we have the All-Star game here next year. And so I think that'll be a really good litmus test about what kind of baseball town Washington has become. It was without baseball, Major League Baseball, for 33 summers. That's a generation and more of kids that either didn't know the sport or had to go up to Baltimore and kind of invest in Cal Ripken and the Orioles. Now, you know, this is the 13th summer with baseball here. We now have kids 10, 11, 12 years old who don't know about not having baseball here. That's the generation that really counts. That's the one that has to grow up here, having gone to Nationals games, and will eventually raise their own kids saying, hey, you know what? I used to sit in this section, and here's who my heroes were. There's a weird situation with the history here where the kids today can't embrace, you know, former Senators stars like, you know, Frank Howard, who was a big slugger here in the 60s, but they can't embrace Andre Dawson and Tim Raines from the Expos years because what do they know about Montreal? And the history is kind of now. I mean, Bryce Harper is a part of that history. Steven Strasburg is a part of that history in real time. I think the All-Star game next summer will be a really interesting kind of glimpse into what we've become as a baseball town.
Portland, I think, would love to have another major league team. The problem is there's not going to be any public money for a stadium. Some of the tribes that have casinos have offered the city, hey, we'll build the stadium for you, but we want to put a casino downtown. And is Portland even on the radar for Major League Baseball, or did it just get used?
Well, I think somebody gets used in these situations all the time. And whether they were actually used during the process or just felt used on the back end, I'm not sure. I think Norfolk was in the running as well. There are two, before baseball expands, they've got to take care of two stadium situations, one in Tampa and one in Oakland. Because if those don't get resolved, then you're looking about franchises moving rather than starting an expansion team. I would say that it's odd, but Montreal is back in the discussion. Now, again, these are not front burner issues for MLB, but they've staged exhibition games there the last several years, right before the beginning of the season. The Blue Jays are very, very successful in Toronto, which is a different team, a different market, or a different city, a different market. But, you know, there's some enthusiasm for the sport in Canada again. So I wouldn't, you know, I don't think this is something that Rob Manfred gets up every day thinking about, where are we going to move another team? Is it going to be Portland or Montreal or someplace else? Vegas, obviously, with the NHL going there, is more in play, although baseball has a more complex relationship with gambling. So that might be difficult. I just don't think this is something that MLB honchos are talking about every day right now.
Barry, I really appreciate you. Again, the book is The Grind. If you want to pick it up, Washington Post columnist Barry Sferluga. And thank you, Barry. I appreciate your time, man.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
See, I got better with his name as the interview went on. Sferluga. Man, if you are somebody in Portland who's sitting around going, we got to get Major League Baseball, we need something else. Meaning, if you're me, and yes, I have an agenda in this. Let's be honest. I like another thing to talk about. I'd like that thing not to be the hypothetical of a team, because that's what we do, right? We sit around and we go, "Hey, the summer's great. It's wonderful. There's blue skies. We've got weather. People visit. We take them to a Timbers game. We go to Multnomah Falls. We go to a Hillsboro Hops game. We take them to the Rose Garden. We tell them to eat out of a food truck." What else? We take them down, let them get a pink box of donuts, and then we hang out and we get it ready for college football. And then the Ducks and the Beavers get us through the fall. And then the NBA season hits and the rain comes. And it's depressing for both of those reasons, because as an NBA fan, you know what's not possible. You're not dumb. You're in it for t-shirts and a little diversion while it's raining. And if the Ducks and Beavers aren't really good, it gets rough in the winter. And we get back into the spring, we start talking about the summer again. But in between that, laced in between that, we talk about Major League Baseball coming to Portland. We talk about the NHL. And we talk about ineffective leadership at City Hall. We should probably, if Gliss is paying attention to what I'm saying, we should probably try to get the mayor, city commissioners.
Get him on the show.
Get him on the show to talk about these things. Punch It Audio is coming up. You're listening to the Bald Faced Truth Radio Show.
Here's John Canzano with the Bald Faced Truth.
Again, check it, direct it, let's begin. Party on, party people, let me hear some noise. DC's in the house, jump, jump, rejoices. There's a party over here, a party over there. Wave your hands in the air, shake the dairy, yeah. These three words mean you're getting busy.
Whoa. Should we keep that music? Is that a keeper? Gliss, the producer of the show, is down there dancing. You don't want to see it, but he's dancing. Should we keep that one? Is that a keeper? You can tweet at me at John Canzano BFT if you have a song request for us to use as bump music. I met a guy, I was at a Starbucks, and a guy came up and he said, I listen to your show every day. I hear that every day, you know, from the army of listeners that are out there. I hear from you every day. I meet you in person. I hear from you. You deliver, a UPS driver delivers a package at the door. He says, man, I listen to the show every day. Today's brush with I listen to you every day comes from my neighborhood. And I was driving, and there's a guy that works in the neighborhood, and he does the lawn care and the trees for one of the neighbors. And I've noticed the guy because, like, there are a lot of people who do maintenance and lawn care, and they're landscapers, they're landscape designers. This guy pays particular attention. He's good. Like, he's like the Picasso, Leonardo da Vinci. He's the Aaron Judge of landscape design, landscapers. And I rolled my window down today, and I said to him, hey, you got a card? Because I'm the landscaper at my house, and I'm not the Da Vinci. I'm more like some guy just painting. So he says, man, I listen to you every day. And I love that he's out there listening while he's working, doing his thing. If you are somebody who listens to the show while you're out working, tweet at me, at John Canzano BFT. Tell me what you do. Met another guy. I was in line at Starbucks this morning. A guy came up and he says, hey, are you the sports guy? And I said, yeah. And he was a veteran, former Marine, older gentleman, a lot of respect for him. And he proceeded to tell me that I need to write and talk more about why, how it is that the money in sports is ruining sports. He says no player's worth $200 million. And while that is true, like, the players are not worth $200 million. I'm not begrudging anybody who can get $200 million for doing what they're doing. I think you go out and you get what the market dictates that you're worth. And get everything you can. I will not begrudge you that. I'm not going to sit around lamenting somebody's not making the money. But I do sit around lamenting the fan experience and the way that here comes the ability and the inability for fans to enjoy seasons because they don't think their team has a chance to win. Or you go to the ballpark and you're paying too much for tickets or can't get a seat or the games are boring. I'll lament all of those things. And sometimes I do them in Punch It Audio, and that's the segment we are playing right now.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth Headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Blazers first-round draft pick Zach Collins got hurt yesterday. Struggled. In summer league. He talked about what he gained, though. Here's Zach Collins. Punch it.
You know, I'm real confident in the fact that, you know, I went out and, you know, didn't feel great physically. You know, I still played pretty decent on offense. Felt some bad turnovers, and, you know, I got a rebound, and I was soft, and, you know, he took it out of my hand. So, got to clean up that stuff, but, you know, I definitely felt more comfortable.
Feels more comfortable. Went out with a quad injury, whether it's a pulled quad or whatever. A lot of people groaning. I'm only groaning because I'm out on a limb a little bit with Zach Collins. I think he's going to end up being a good player. And I know the sample size is very small, and I know he's young. And these are the things I will bring up while I wait for him to blossom. But he's 19 years old, and he's struggled in the summer league. And I thought he might do a little better, look a little more comfortable in the summer league. So I am a little concerned that he might make me look dumb. But I'll stick with it. I think Zach Collins is going to be a good player. I think he's going to stay healthy because he's going to need to be healthy to be a good player. I'm betting on that. Caleb Swanigan, on the other hand, he looks ready. He was asked who he models his game after. Punch it.
Man, just guys with motors and with the mentality, you know, like Kobe, Russell Westbrook, you know, even down to like Dennis Rodman, guys like that just got a motor.
Got a motor. He's got a motor. You put Caleb Swanigan on the defensive line, he's relentless. Outside linebacker, defensive end. put him on a basketball court, he looks like a guy who's playing hard. He plays hard, he runs hard in transition, he finishes hard. I thought his last Summer League game was his best game. Showed a little bit of what he can do from every element, every facet of his game. Saw a little shooting, finishing, rebounding. He passes well. I like Caleb Swanigan. The Mariners, Robinson Cano, got the big hit on All-Star Game. Came in extra innings with bullpens running out of arms. Both teams happy about this? Punch it.
The 1-1. Swing and a drive. Well struck. Right field on its way. Out of here. Into the bullpen in right field. And Robinson Cano will trot around the bases. AL2 and L1 here top 10.
The American League has now got a dominant run in the All-Star game. And look, it didn't mean anything, didn't decide anything. But that solo shot in the 10th inning is kind of fitting that the game ended on a home run, isn't it? Given the pace, 3,343 home runs so far this season. That's the most ever at the All-Star break. On pace for more than 6,000 home runs this year. Robinson Cano, thank you for ending that night. 3 hours, 9 minutes. We touched on this earlier in the show, but Nelson Cruz took a selfie with Yadier Molina and Joe West during the All-Star game. That's umpire Joe West. Punch it.
Come on. Was that a... Somebody just take a picture?
Yeah, Cruz brought up his phone.
And, no way.
Wants a picture with Joe West.
Hey, 5,000 games.
Took a picture with the umpire. I loved it. It showed a little personality. Thought it was a fun moment in a game that didn't mean anything. Nelson Cruz said that his phone was silenced during that. He didn't want to take a call. What did he do with the phone after the picture? Did he put it back in his pocket? Bliss, did anybody see that? Because I didn't notice that. I was just kind of laughing about it.
Yeah, he swung with the phone in his back pocket.
What if he had a slide and he's going head
exactly.
first, I guess, huh?
I think he was probably under strict orders from Mariners front office to not slide. Because he's had some injury troubles this year. But
what if he got on first base? Would he have been playing Bejeweled or something on first base?
It's possible. Candy Crush.
Candy Crush. Do you have a game like that that you're into, Curtis Rogers?
No, I don't. I have a very boring phone. Any kid that grabs my phone, they're immediately disappointed. Because they're like, there are no games on this. This is worthless. So yeah, I'm an adult.
The three-year-old fooled me last night. I had a video that I took. I was using the power washer yesterday after the show. And the 11-year-old in the household grabbed the power washer and said, can I just shoot it off into the air for a few minutes? Like, you know, I said, sure, why not? So he's shooting it off. I took a video of him. The three-year-old got the phone later. She goes, can I see that video? And she had a smile on her face. And I was watching her. And I was like, the video's not that long. And I look, and she's on YouTube already. She just grabbed the phone and went right to YouTube. I'm like, no, that's not happening. Too many sound bites to choose from during the Conor McGregor-Floyd Mayweather press conference yesterday. Here's McGregor. Punch it.
But 20,000 people, it's mind-blowing. I'm absolutely honored to be here before you to give you this great spectacle. And somebody's O has got to go. He's in a f***ing tracksuit.
He's in a tracksuit. I had an intern show up in a tracksuit once. In a backwards baseball cap. I sent him home. He came back. I told him, you look like you're hanging out at a video arcade. I think if you're in a boxer, you can be in a tracksuit. That's kind of like your work gear. Floyd Mayweather, what say you? Punch it.
And I'm guaranteeing you this. You going out on your face or you going out on your back? Now, which way you want to go? Which way you want to go? That's right. Sit quiet, you little...
Floyd Mayweather. That's not the Muhammad Ali trash talk that I played earlier in the show. Ali was innocent compared to those guys. Am I wrong? Like, but I enjoyed Ali because I thought Ali's trash talk was smarter.
Well, Henry Cooper's nothing but a tramp. He's a bum. I'm the world's greatest. He must fall in 5 rounds, but if you talk about me, I'll cut it 3. I'll never fight another fella as tough as Doug Jones. Not even that big ugly bear Sonny Liston.
Is he your next fight?
Well, after I annihilate this Henry Cooper, I want that bear.
And what's going to happen to him?
I want him bad.
What's going to happen to him?
He might be great, but he'll fall in 8.
It was whimsical, Ali. called you ugly. That was the worst thing that he called you. Mayweather, by the way, also had some difficulty understanding one of the questions during the Q&A. Here you go. Punch it.
Floyd, champion, with all respect, they say old dogs, they don't learn any tricks. But, you know, hunter dogs, they're always going to be ending catching the rabbit. Are you going to be ending catching the rabbit? You are the winner. You're the champion.
I don't know what you said, but thank you. I know you said I'm the winner and I'm the champion. I like that. I don't know what you said, but thank you. The chat, the rabbit, the whatever you say. I like that.
I like Floyd Mayweather. Can I play that again? Telling you. It's going to be, I don't know if the fight's going to be any good. But the run-up to the fight has been spectacular.
Floyd, champion, with all respect.
Champion with all respect. Okay? Floyd, champion with all respect. I got him to that point. I'm fine.
They say old dogs, they don't learn new tricks. But
okay, they say old dogs, they don't learn new tricks.
You know, hunter dogs, they're always going to be ending catching the rabbit.
I have no idea. There's a concussion and a rabbit in there.
You're going to be ending catching the rabbit.
Are you going to be catching the rabbit?
You are the winner. You're the champion.
You're the winner. You're the champion.
I don't know what you said, but thank you. I know you said I'm the winner and I'm the champion. I like that. I don't know what you said, but thank you. The rabbit, whatever you said, I like that.
We used to play a game like that on this radio show, but I felt like it was getting a little out of hand. We had a custodian whose language was, original native language was not English. And we used to have him read sports phrases on air, and then the listeners had to decide what he was saying. Kuglis, can you tell me what he's saying here? Like, I'm going to play this. You tell me what he's saying, okay?
Floyd, champion, with all respect, they say old dogs, they don't learn any tricks. But, you know, hunter dogs, they're always going to be ending catching the rabbit. Are you going to be ending catching the rabbit? You are the winner. You're the champion.
What did he say?
He said, you're the champion, and that the hunter dogs always catch the rabbit, and he's going to catch the rabbit, and he's the winner.
But why is he declaring him the winner? Is that a question?
I don't know. I didn't get that either. That was my favorite part. You are the winner.
You won. Tyson Alger of the Oregonian does a great job covering the Oregon Ducks. He joined Justin and Devon on 102.9 and 750 The Game in Portland this morning, and he talked about the Ducks' weaknesses. Where are they weak? The Oregon Ducks football program. Tyson Alger says they have no receivers. Punch it.
In terms of straight-up wide receivers, I think this would be a big problem for Oregon because besides Carrington, the only really receiver with a lot of experience coming back is Charles Nelson.
Alger does a great job covering this team. It's his job to cover the news. It's my job to tell you what I think of the news. Here's the deal. Willie Taggart will figure it out. They've got running backs. They've got a great running back in Royce Freeman. They've got a quarterback. Justin Herbert's going to be really good. That's not going to be the problem. Or I don't think Oregon's problem really is offensively finding weapons because they will find guys who can catch passes. And the last time they were in this predicament, everyone said they have no receivers. Lo and behold, they found receivers. It's the coach's job to do that. I like Darian McNeil, the real deal McNeil. Young freshman, true freshman out of Florida. I think he will be a difference maker on offense. He's small, but that's where Willie Taggart's going to live. Going to have to live with guys in the slot. He's going to have to live with Herbert spreading the ball around the field. He's going to have to live with finding a new tight end weapon. He's going to have to live with Royce Freeman rushing the football. I think we're going to spend a lot of time talking about defense, though. I think we're going to spend a lot of time talking about whether or not they've got the personnel to play the defense that they want to play, and whether or not how many years it's going to take to get monsters on defense, because it's not a one-year thing. It's not a quick fix. Ducks basketball player Peyton Pritchard joined us on this radio show yesterday. I asked him about the competitive nature between himself and his sister, Lexi. Lexi's going to Santa Clara. She's committed as a basketball scholarship. Peyton Pritchard, Ducks point guard. Punch it. Now, your sister plays, and she looks like an athlete, Lexi. Can she beat you in a game of horse, or?
To be honest, I don't think Lexi's going to beat me in anything that is competitive. I won't let her beat me. But she might think so, but she knows deep down.
Lexi then fired back on Twitter, saying, first of all, to set the record straight, what he's saying is a load of beep. I think we should get Lexi on the show. Let her defend her honor. In fact, I think what we should do is set up a series of games, possibly that maybe we conspire with Lexi to find things that Lexi can dominate Peyton at.
Get her on the show.
Like, you know, maybe Lexi tells us, you know what? He's never beat me in a foot race of 12 yards or less. I'm quicker. Maybe she says, hey, left-handed layup. It's my thing. I'll never miss one. Maybe he's got a real weakness in his chess game. I don't know, but maybe we conspire with Lexi and we put on an Olympics where we have 10 events that Lexi dominates him in. That's Punch It Audio. Tweet at me at John Canzano BFT. Francisco checking in. He says he's a machinist living in King City, listens to the show every day. He says he wants more boxing. Well, Francisco, did you not hear the boxing coverage on today's show? We talked about Floyd Mayweather.
Floyd, champion, with all respect. They say old dogs, they don't learn any tricks. But, you know, hunter dogs, they're always going to be anything catching the rabbit. Are you going to be anything catching the rabbit? You are the winner. You're the champion.
You're the winner, and you're the champion. Francisco, appreciate that you listen every day. Kyle checks in. He says he's out here delivering the dog food. But I knew that. UPS Kyle checking in. Sorry, Kyle. Amazon Prime Day yesterday. UPS drivers, I feel you. It's Amazon Prime Day, and you are the one that got stronger. And I've got steps in front of my house. People have been to my house. I have steps. So the UPS driver coming up the steps with a box full of like 50 pounds of dog food, I love you, man. Travis checking in, U.S. Forest Service. He listens to the show daily. Tell me where you are and what you do, especially if you're working while you listen to the show, at John Canzano BFT. Tony's in Portland. Tony, what's on your mind?
John, good afternoon. Yeah, I like hearing the clip about Muhammad Ali with Henry Cooper.
Yeah.
Just want to remind you, Henry Cooper put him on his butt. and to this day, an Englishman will say that he knocked him out, but they got the timing wrong, and he got up and caught his eye, and that was history, but he put him on his butt.
Yeah, they fought twice. They fought in 63 and 65, and the first fight was stopped in the fifth round, the second fight in the sixth round. Both times, Cooper was bleeding pretty badly.
He had really weak eyes. He cut really easily and badly, but he was a really kind of a very much loved boxer in England.
Yeah. Do you have people have a hard time understanding you? Like, do you ever get in situations where you say something and people are like, "Come again? I don't know what you're saying there."
Pardon? Yes. Yes, I do. Yes. When I first got here, people said, "Slow down. You talk too fast." Yes, I. Yeah, I do. I get that a lot. Also, if I'm from Australia, people ask me if I'm from Australia.
Yeah, put some jumbo shrimp on the Barbie. Tony, thank you for calling in. Appreciate him. Leave it right here. Coming up, we're going to talk to Dale Murphy. All Dale Murphy did was go to 7 All-Star games, win 2 MVPs, 5-time Gold Glove winner. We're going to talk to Dale Murphy about what he's up to now and what it was like to play for the Braves when they exploded. And the Braves exploded onto the scene with TBS and Ted Turner buying the network and making them America's team. America's team! You remember, like, they would come on and it was like, you had Gene Garber, Bob Horner, Murphy. I mean, you knew their names. You knew the players. This was one of the great teams, and the Cubs and the Braves were way ahead of the curve in creating their own networks and building their team and their branding around it. It was brilliant, and it has now been followed by the Dodgers and the Blazers and everybody else. Not saying it's a good thing. Just started with them. Dale Murphy next.
I want you all to listen up. This is important stuff, all right?
Okay. Here we go.
The Bald-Faced Truth.
Call 503-417-7575 or 877-733-0750 or text to 64636.
Here we go in 3, 2.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a Bald-Faced Truth.
I love having our next guest on the show, in part because he falls into the sweet spot of athletes in the time that I really, as a kid, followed baseball. I know he's not going to want to hear that, but Dale Murphy, 18-year baseball career. You remember him probably with the Atlanta Braves, who played for two other teams. And here was a guy that is a seven-time All-Star, two-time MVP of the league, the National League, four-time Silver Slugger, and a five-time Gold Glover. Did it all. He joins us now. How are you?
Great. Thank you. Thanks for that intro. Thank you.
You fall in that sweet spot because when you broke into the league, you're not going to want to hear this, but I was six, okay? And by the time you're done, I'm 23. So, I mean, I watched you in those years where you were the MVP in 82 and 83. I'm 12 and 13. I mean, I was a Giants fan. I hated you for it, but you were like killing it, you know?
Well, thank you. Well, yeah, I know. Where's the time gone? I think about the time that I've been done, and this is my 24th year of retirement, so then I start adding up the numbers of those MVP years and how long ago that was. It's crazy, but it's good memories.
Do you still dream baseball? Do you have baseball dreams?
I think those are out of my system. I did have them for a while after I retired. The weirdest dreams, like I was always late for the game. You know what I mean? It was like, hey, you know, you need to go in, but I couldn't, you know, either I couldn't find my keys to the car or I couldn't find my glove. And, you know, that was my subconscious telling me, you're never going back. You're never going to make it back. You know, I think eventually you really miss it. I mean, I always miss it, but I mean, especially the first few years after retirement, but I think I finally talked myself into it that it's never going to happen again.
When you get to the big leagues in 1976, you're 20. You become an All-Star at age 24. Did you consider making it, getting it to the big leagues, or making an All-Star game, or winning an MVP, or did you ever have that moment where you go, "I've arrived"?
Well, the my first All-Star game, no, you know, you're just, let me see, 1980, I think when you get a little comfortable thinking, you know, I figured this out, you know, and that I have arrived, I think probably about after my fourth or fifth year, and obviously after I won an MVP, you're like, you know, okay, this is pretty big stuff here. But I tried to use it to motivate me, to keep me going, instead of, you know, just to, I don't think the tendency of most competitive athletes is to relax any, but you know what I mean.
You
can tend to think, well, I figured this out. And so you get kind of nervous. It's like, well, what am I going to do next year? I mean, are things going to work out this well next year? So you still always have, there's probably with a lot of athletes, even at the highest levels, there's probably a lot more self-doubt than people would realize. At least that was my case. I was always never comfortable that, okay, I figured this out, that it's, you know, I can dial it in every year. You feel like you're on the verge of, you know, going into a 2-week slump, and then you kind of figure, you know, you forgot how to hit. That's not a comfortable feeling. So I think there's probably, you know, there's just a fine line between really at least for me, that between really being in the groove and just going out playing and not thinking, being in the zone, I guess you want to call it, and, you know, wondering if you're going to get a hit tonight. I think there's probably a little more self-doubt than people would understand and appreciate for guys playing in the major leagues.
We're talking to Dale Murphy, former seven-time Major League All-Star. The All-Star game happens last night. What are your memories from those seven All-Star games? You had seven in eight seasons.
Well, obviously my first one in Dodger Stadium, and a lot of the guys I watched, you know, while I was in high school were there. Pete Rose, Johnny Bench, you know, a lot of the big red machine were there, Joe Morgan, and you know, just the veterans guys. I think that's one of the interesting things I thought of the other day, was that this All-Star teams now, these guys are so young. Mostly the teams I was a part of were veteran teams. I mean, it speaks well for the talent level of the young guys in Major League Baseball. They're predominantly young players. But I'd have to say one of the most interesting memories is Pete Rose walking by me in my first one and said, "Hey, good luck tonight. And if you get in, don't do anything, you know, you wouldn't do during the regular season." You know, in other words, yeah, it's an All-Star game, but we're here to win, play hard.
And I look at I'm looking at that box score from that game. It was a 4-2 win, 56,000 at Dodger Stadium. It was, you know, you had the guys in that lineup, like from Dave Parker to Johnny Bench and J.R. Richard on the mound. I mean, J.R. Richard, we've had him on the show. J.R. Richard just threw 100 miles an hour and people got out of the way.
Well, I'm not sure of the starting time of that game. You know, even if it was a regular 7:30 game, I think there was a few shadows at the beginning, and Johnny Bench was catching JR. He goes, I don't think anybody's going to touch a ball off of JR. You got to remember those late 70s years and early 80s. Of course, that was 1980. JR was on top of his game, and he was people always ask me, you know, toughest pitcher to hit. I go, that few years there, JR was just about impossible. It struck out well over 300. So, you know, we had a good staff, obviously. And, you know, I'm very thankful. I think it was Chuck Tanner was managing, and he didn't have to get me in. I mean, you know, back then, not everybody played. It was, you know, they didn't try and get you in to the game, but he got me in actually ahead of, I can't remember who it might have been, Jose Cruz, and I played a couple innings, got in at bat, so it was a thrill.
We're talking to Dale Murphy. In that game, Ken Griffey hits a home run in the fifth inning off Tommy John. It was a pretty good shot. You remember that home run?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, Ken Griffey Sr., who I was lucky to play with at the end of his career there in Atlanta before he went to Seattle and played with his son, or maybe he played in Cincinnati with Junior. Maybe I can't even remember where did he play with his son. Was it Seattle?
Yeah, they were both in Seattle.
I can't remember now.
Yeah,
were they both in any?
Yeah, I think they were both in Seattle. Is that right, Curtis? Were they both? Yeah, he's giving me a thumbs up. He's a big Mariners fan.
Yeah.
Yep, they were both in Seattle.
So, anyway, yeah, I certainly remember that home run. You know, it was, like I say, it's the first time you're on the field with all those guys. I mean, I obviously played against them during the, you know, the first half of the season, or that was about my third full year. You know, But making an All-Star team, that was my first year in the outfield. That's when the Braves moved me to the outfield, and I made an All-Star team. And it's hard to describe exactly what you're feeling, but it's amazing. And I think there was a little more mystique to the All-Star game back then without interleague play, because it was really the only chance you had to show that you were better than the American League, because you didn't play against, and there was a separation. You only played each other in the All-Star game or the World Series. So as a result of that, it made the game, which I still think is a good game. It's a competitive game because of the nature of the game of baseball. What I mean by that is you cannot not play defense in baseball. You want to strike guys out. You want to make great plays on defense, whereas the Pro Bowl in football and the NBA All-Star game, defense is really – not part of it because it's just too hard to play. You kind of take the time off and don't play defense. But in baseball, you play defense. You have to. You don't want to make a fool of yourself. And you try to catch ground balls. You try to make great plays. And it makes it a better exhibition game, I think, as far as sports are concerned, as far as sports all-star games are concerned. But and then the separation between the leagues, I think it had a little more intrigue to it and just a little bit more on the line.
I can remember the game on like a Tuesday night. You'd be at school all day, and it would be, for a lot of people, it was the first time, you know, you got to see Dave Parker or Rod Carew, because those games were not broadcast in our area, where I got to see all these guys play against each other. And that brings me to what TBS did for the Braves, and what you in particular. What was that like to play when, like, the Braves were America's team?
Well, again, it's hard to put into words what that meant to me personally as far as my career is concerned, and just nowadays in reconnecting with fans like you from those days. It's remarkable to talk to people that, like you said, literally watched us play every day. It was something Ted Turner came up with. We're going to put you on, you know, cable TV, on TBS, and then obviously the Cubs is the other team everybody watched. They were daytime and we were at night, and it established this fan base of Braves fans throughout the country, you know, into Alaska and Hawaii, and it just is a remarkable thing. It was fun then, but now it's even more remarkable as I talk to people and what they, you know, what they did every day. I mean, that's one of the appealing things about baseball, is the long summer saga of a team. You follow them every night. It's not great every night, but over the course of the time, it's like a long miniseries or a long soap opera. And people, I'll tell you what the key to me was our announcers. Ernie Johnson, Pete Van Weir, and Skip Carey. What you saw wherever you were throughout the country was a hometown broadcast.
Yeah.
This was the first time you didn't see Game of the Week, where Joe Garagiola and Tony Kubek came in and, you know, didn't really know us, but did the broadcast. And that was fun. But when you have hometown broadcasters in your home every night, you really feel a connection with the team, and that's what happened.
Dale Murphy with us, former Atlanta Brave, among his stops. That's the one you probably know him from. Was MVP twice and a five-time Gold Glover. Did you realize at the time, did it feel different as you went city to city than maybe other clubs did, that you had that national following? Or, like you point out, is it only something that you realized after that, hey, we had this thing that you know, the Giants, the A's, the Angels, they didn't have that?
Yeah, we started to notice it. Obviously, as soon as we got on cable and got on every day, but in 82 when we started winning, and we'd go to Houston, and there would be, you know, hundreds of Braves fans at our hotel that have traveled all over Texas to come see us and not the Astros. Or I can remember being in San Francisco, running into someone at our hotel. I'm like, where are you from? They said, Alaska. This is the closest we can come. Obviously, without interleague play, couldn't go to Seattle. So, you start to figure out, you go to a city like St. Louis with serious Cardinal fans. And again, people were coming from all over the Midwest, and we started to feel it. Yeah, it was, I got to say, just like all of us felt, there's something going on here. It's exciting, and it was fun to be a part of, and we appreciate it even more looking back. I mean, when you're playing, you know, you just kind of get, you know, into your thing, and you're just playing the game. But now as I look back, it was a remarkable time for us, a lot of fun.
We've talked about this before. I've got a Hall of Fame vote. I voted for you in the last 2 years on the ballot for you were my first 2 years voting. And I was disappointed to see that more people, a guy that was playing at the level. I mean, you were doing what Mike Trout was doing at that time in the 80s. And the end of your career, I think people hold that over you. Were you disappointed with that, or at peace with that? Where are you with the Hall of Fame not getting in?
Well, thank you for your vote, by the way. I think I think that's the best way to say it. Is I you know, I'm at peace with it. If I think my high was like 23%. If I had 63% and you need, I think, 75 or, you know, 65%, I think I would probably say something different, because that would only be like a handful more of votes. You know what I mean? If I was knocking on the door like some guys, I think Jack Morris is an example, and there's probably some other guys. I'm just like, that just doesn't seem right. You could get that many, and then the threshold is 75%, which is such a large majority of people. I understand. I've got some very loyal supporters. Maybe something will happen with the new Veterans Committee, which isn't the right terminology, but they realize the guys from the 70s and 80s aren't getting as much consideration. So instead of every 5 years now, I think my name will come up every 3 years. And, you know, we'll see. But I'll tell you, I'm not the only guy. You know, there's guys I think should be in that haven't got very much consideration. So, you know, I understand it. I guess that, like you said, that's the best way to put it, really, is that, you know, I'm at peace with it. I understand. Maybe someday.
I look at Andre Dawson and Jim Rice as comparisons for you, and I go, okay, both of those guys in the same era, you know, home run wise for a decade, you dominate. And I look at that and I say, okay, you are very comparable to two guys that are in. What? Give me the guy or two that you think should be in. Like you say, I'm not alone. Who else should be in?
Well, I think Jack Morris, Lee Smith. I do not understand why Lee Smith is not in. Who was the
voted for him?
The saves leader. Saves leader for a number of years. Yeah. I mean, you know, all-time saves leader for a number of years. There's guys. He's got more saves than that I can remember. I think Raleigh Fingers and Bruce Sutter. Maybe he did things differently, and he was a little more. I think a lot of relievers should be in. They're a little hesitant to put the closers in, but I think they've changed the game. I think they should be in. I think. There's some right off the top of my head, those are the guys I think of. But I love Lou Whitaker and Alan Trammell. And there's I think Jim Cott should be in. I think Ted Simmons should be in. I look at Ted Simmons' numbers as a catcher. I mean, they're remarkable. They've tried to tweak the voting a little bit, and that helps. It's just pretty tough to get traction, but I could probably think of a number of guys that could be in.
All right, we really appreciate your time, and yes, I voted for Morris, Lee Smith, and you. All those names have been on my ballot. So, but there's some guys. I've talked to other voters. There are some guys who just will not vote for a closer. They go, hey, they're only up here this many times. The value to their teams, but we've seen baseball teams that cannot win because they don't have a closer.
Well, there you go.
You know,
that's my question too. I'm like, and the DH as well. We can't hold that. The guy's playing a position in baseball. We can't hold that against him. You know, if there's been some great DHs, they should be in as well. And a closer is part of the game. But I couldn't agree with you more. Even if he was used differently now than then, the term closer is critical to the success of the team. And there's been some great ones. John Franco.
Yeah.
Check out John Franco's numbers. They're incredible.
Dale Murphy, you're the best. I appreciate you, man.
Oh, great to be with you anytime.
There he is, Dale Murphy, who for a decade dominated baseball. Look at Dale Murphy's numbers in the 1980s. Nobody hit more home runs, drove in more runs. Nobody did it better than Dale Murphy for a decade. And he's not in the Hall of Fame. He's going to have to wait for the Veterans Committee to possibly put him in. Edgar Martinez, does he deserve to be in the Hall of Fame? A lot of Seattle fans. Curtis Rogers, does Edgar deserve to be in the Hall of Fame? Yeah, thumbs up, he says. All right, coming up, we will kick that around. Plus, the Rockets and Knicks trying to make Carmelo to Houston a reality. Can the Blazers get involved in that? We'll talk about the third and fourth team possibilities is Adrian Wojnarowski reporting that those teams trying to come to a deal, no deal imminent, but the Knicks and Rockets are confident they're trying to find a third or fourth team in the framework. Is it possible the Blazers could get involved? And if so, would that be some relief for somebody on this roster? Leave it right here.
More with John Canzano.
And Rockets expanding the scope of Carmelo Anthony's escape. It's like he's Shawshank and he's like breaking through the wall of Shawshank. He's got a poster over the top of the hole. He's trying to escape out of New York. We can cry all we want about being in a small market, but being in a big market does not guarantee you success. And the Knicks have proved that. And if you're a Knicks fan, like, you might lament all the bad decisions that have been made, but that is an organization that is spending money. Like, there's nothing worse that, like James Dolan, at least he spends money. The Donald Sterling Clippers era, you know, that was bad ownership. The Miami Marlins and the position they're in, bad ownership. But, you know, if you look at the Knicks, it's bad decisions and bad moves and, you know, James Dolan trying to, at least he looks like he's attempting to win. And in the meantime, the Knicks trying to get Carmelo out of New York, the Rockets trying to get him and make the NBA more interesting for at least people in Houston. But I got my mind on other things. I'm watching this summer and I realize now we're in July. And I start to get a little bit, nervous about things. And maybe if you're like me, see, because what happens to me in this job, in the fact that I cover sports, is we get really busy in the fall. Right around the first week of September, late August, first week of September, man, it gets serious. College football comes. I mean, we get memos that get sent out that say you can't take vacation. Like, September through November. Like, at the Oregonian, they're not going to let their lead sports columnist go on vacation during the football season unless you're having a baby, getting married, or maimed. Like, that's it. KGW, that show goes into primetime. Sports Sunday, the show that I host on that station, goes into primetime. You're not going to miss during the NFL season. So it gets serious for me right around, like, September. And certainly by Labor Day, you're like, you're knee deep in it. And I'm underground. So what happens to me right around July 12th today, is I start to get nervous that I'm losing my summer. Because I realize all of a sudden that I have like six weeks left. And then it gets serious for me. It's like kids going back to school and they're sitting around and they're going, all right, I gotta wring every moment I can get out of this summer. And we have Camp Exceptional coming up next week. It's the summer camp for the kids that the BFT Foundation puts on. And that is you, the listener, who makes that happen. You support the BFT Foundation. Not only if you give money at baldfacetruth.org and you make a donation to the 501c3. You can do that. You can literally go onto the website and you can rent a musical instrument or pay for a summer camp or do whatever you want to do. Whatever you think fits for your... for the desire that you have. But also, you support the BFT Foundation by supporting the great companies that support the BFT Foundation. And you know who those companies are, but you've got the Shoe Mill Stores, Portland to Salem. You've got First Call Heating and Cooling, Anderson Pool Works. But most of all, you've got Oregon Blinds. Derek Eberhardt at Oregon Blinds has been a huge help. So if you are looking for window coverings anywhere, Portland to Eugene, OregonBlinds.net should be a stop for you. And I thank Derek and I thank his team, his brother's fantastic. The whole family's out there. His wife's out there at the golf tournament and the summer camp. And it's just awesome to see that all come together. But I got that camp next week, and then I got to wring everything I can get out of summer. Now, I've never been a big Sun River Bend guy, in part because, like, it's, you know, it's over there, and I'm driving there, and I'm that's a couple days of vacation. You can drive it over there, you're driving back. So I'm thinking to myself, what else do I need to do? We're going to do Sun River and Bend this year. But what else? Like, you're listening to this radio show across the state. You live here. You work here and you play here. Tell me what you're doing this summer that everybody else needs to know about. And this isn't our Monday thing, like, what have you done? And by the way, the Monday thing, the shtick that we did on Monday, what have you done? Call in, basically, for people who didn't hear Monday's show. I said, what have you done that nobody else is going to call has done? And people called in with the most amazing things. It was laughing out loud funny. It was interesting. It was compelling. We'll do that every Monday. But tell me what you have to do. What do I need to do in the next 6 weeks that I may or may not know about? Like, I heard somebody say I need to river raft in the Mackenzie River. It's on the list. Somebody said, hey, when you go to Sun River, you got to do this. Eastern Oregon, the Cascades. You tell me, where? What do I need to do? And by the way, the best moment of that whole thing with what would you do was the guy who called in and said he could imitate Ethel Merman.
I imitate Ethel Merman.
Okay, I want to hear it.
Okay. I don't know how good it's going to come across on the speakers here, but anyway, here we go.
There's no business like show business. There's no business I know. Everything about it is appealing. Everything the traffic will allow. Nowhere could you get that happy feeling when you are stealing that extra bow.
Phenomenal. Like, I have found myself in the shower trying to imitate that, trying to capture that moment, and not as well as him.
I don't know how good it's going to come across on the speakers here, but anyway, here we go.
There's no business like show business. There's no business I know.
I just, it's amazing to me. Come on, be real. When you all heard that, you were in your cars or in your cubicle or in the shower the next day, and you did a, there's no business like show business. You know you did.
There's no business like show business. There's no business I know.
Like, and the fact that he knows so much more of that song blows me away. Because everybody could do, like, there's no business like show business. But it's like when he starts getting into, like, verse 2 and 3.
Everything about it is appealing. Everything the traffic will allow. Nowhere could you get that happy feeling when you are stealing that extra bow.
And how do you find out anyway that you know how to do that? Like, I just don't know how you find out you know how to do that. What do I need to do before this summer ends? Give me that summer activity that you do that tells me, hey, Canzano, you got to try this. It could be as simple as salt and straw. You need to go there. It could be as complex as, listen, you go down to the Deschutes River and you see a guy named Red who lives in a van. He's got a canoe. Give me something. Give me something that you do that is your summer ritual that you go, all right, this is something we do every summer. 503-417-7575 is the number. Make it good. Mike's in Portland. Mike, what do you got?
So, John, man, actually, I wanted to talk to you about all of this nonsense about building a baseball stadium and getting the city to get behind it. And that's political. That would be political suicide, John, for politicians in this city to build a baseball stadium. And the reason it would be a political suicide is because the city of Portland has problem with homelessness. And if they would spend money towards building a stadium and not building affordable housing, that would be political suicide. And the reason I'm saying this is because all of your compatriots, they come on the air and they start this whole nonsense about building a stadium, and we need that. It's right now, political reasons, it won't ever happen. And also about building a football team, we got a football team. We got the Ducks. The Ducks are entrenched. And I don't think that Phil Knight, with all the marketing and all the years that it took to build the Ducks up to the brand that they are, I don't think that NFL football team will be allowed to come here now. And I just wanted to put that out to you.
But you raised the idea that, like, it's affordable housing or a stadium. But do you think people are homeless because housing costs a lot of money? I think that a lot of people are homeless because mental illness is a problem. It's an epidemic. And I don't think people, given any kind of choice, would choose to be homeless.
No, that's not true. The reason, well, that's part of it. But the reason that there's homelessness out here, John, is because there's a housing shortage, the crisis. They ain't enough housing, and particularly they ain't enough affordable housing. Where all these people that have moved into Oregon, there's no housing.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think so. I think if you show me people who have jobs, who are not mentally ill, who are saying, I just can't afford to live somewhere, so I'm living in a tent under the overpass, find me somebody like that, and I will agree with you. I get what he's saying. I think the better argument would have been, and sometimes he comes on, he's really good. Today, eh. Look, if the better argument would have been, there are more important priorities for a city than a stadium. Okay, but let's play devil's advocate with that. Let's just say it's not public money that builds a stadium. Let's say that the city of Portland or the state of Oregon or Tualatin or whoever says, look, we're going to let the tribes put a casino in a downtown area, frankly, adjacent to the stadium, in exchange for funding that stadium. Now you haven't spent any public money. You've got a baseball stadium. And now we can start talking about, hey, is there a ticket tax that could help alleviate some of the problems, the issues that you're talking about, education, mental illness, homelessness. See, too often I think we get caught up in talking about it's an either or when you build a stadium. Either we're investing this money here or there. And what are you neglecting when you start talking about we're going to invest millions and hundreds of millions, and in the case of a stadium, $1 billion in building a stadium? You start talking about the things that deserve to be funded before that. So now, if we could build a baseball stadium, let's just use that as the example. And the tribes paid for it. And the city of Portland acknowledged what many other large cities are acknowledging, that gambling's everywhere. It's on your mobile device. You're not opening a Pandora's box by allowing the tribes to build a casino in the metropolitan area. And you look at the possibility of a baseball stadium solving some other problems. Is anybody against that? I don't think it's a lack of affordable housing that is causing people to live under the overpasses in tents. I think there's a lot of other issues that are going on. Charlie's in Vancouver. Charlie, welcome.
John, I hope you are right. I really do. And I would have agreed with you a year or two ago. I just see it changing so quickly, so fastly. I mean, I'll just give you myself an example. I'm on the other side of the river where it's a little cheaper, but my rent has gone from $800 to $1,150 in 3.5 years at the exact same place. And I think I'm a little bit better situation, but if you're 20-something that's making minimum wage, you don't live by yourself. And even if you have two jobs, you do not live by yourself. And I'm only saying that because I see my daughter and her friends bouncing in and out of my place just going through. And it's really tough when the requirements that they ask for rent are so stringent, like 33% of your income has to be expendable. And it's just not realistic at all. And I agree with you that I'm not sure that one has to do with the other, but I don't think that it's the situation where it was, where it's just mental illness.
Yeah, I think there are cases, Charlie, I think you're right, there are cases where people are being priced out of their housing. But I think when you look at the causes, by and large, for people who end up homeless, yeah, there are traumatic events. They lose a job. They have a personal crisis. Mental health and addiction, yep. All of that in there. But you know, their unemployment, poverty, low wages, sure. But for people who want to make it simply about, hey, there's a lack of affordable housing, therefore we should not build a stadium. Look, let's build a stadium and have that help subsidize some other things. How about the schools? How about the mental illness epidemic? And see, that's the one that I think this city could do so much better with. And the state of Oregon, we could all do better with it. Anytime you talk to a police officer, what do they talk to you about? They talk to you about, man, we deal with mentally ill people day after day after day. So when you look at the top causes of homelessness, not just in the state of Oregon, but in America, the place I want to start is where when you have children who are homeless. There's more than a million children nationwide who are homeless. And I'm talking to you about kids who end up in shelters and who are victims of physical and mental abuse and, yes, job loss, domestic violence, divorce, family disputes, mental illness. There's a lot of things. Many factors push people into the streets. But I don't want to make it like, okay, because the cost of housing has risen. People are then saying, well, I got to live in a tent or I got to live in a car. So I do think that you can look for solutions in sports. And I have Mike calling in and saying, we're never going to get a stadium. It would be political suicide. Well, how about a politician who's got the vision to go, hey, maybe it's time that we open the doors. There's an NFL team going to Vegas. You can buy a lottery ticket. Like, we're so selectively hypocritical when it comes to gambling. It feels to me like the marijuana debate all over again, where people are like, anti-marijuana, anti-marijuana. Oh, there's tax money in it? Marijuana's legal. So it feels to me like if you could, as a politician, harness the idea that we're going to use a stadium to not just create jobs and improve the profile of the city of Portland or some outlying city, but if you're going to use that to solve a bigger problem, like the funding of education in the state of Oregon, period, or mental illness programs, shelters, domestic violence, like, is that not what politics, like, isn't that the heart of politics? Solve a problem. So instead of sitting back and just going, nah, not possible, what about the tribes? Does the offer still stand from the tribes who wanted to put a casino in downtown Portland in exchange for building a stadium? Does that offer stand? Has anybody bothered to ask? If so, somebody should ask. And somebody should look into, hey, is this something that's worth doing? Instead of the red light, nah, we're more comfortable just shooing people away and more comfortable in neighborhoods in southeast Portland that are, the police are raiding now and saying, hey, you got to move. If you got more than this number of people living in tents, you can't live there. You can't sleep in your car. We got to start looking at, hey, can we find solutions for people? And the listeners of the show, you just did not do a very good job of helping me out with my summer. Instead, now we're now talking about problems. But the bottom line is this. Instead of just saying no to something because it's sports related, why don't we start looking for answers and solutions? I don't know. If you're a politician, you're in politics. I know they listen to this show at City Hall because we're literally across the street. And I'll walk down to get coffee. And the council and the commissioners and the mayor, and they all go, hey, I've listened to the show. All right? Hey, if you need me to advise, I will walk across the street and I'll throw a couple of ideas that we should be looking into. If that's what we need, I'll do it. I don't want to be a politician, though. All right, you can get a podcast of the show by going to SoundCloud and iTunes. Adriana does it every day. She podcasts. She compartmentalizes the interviews. Dale Murphy and Barry Serverluga. You can get both of those interviews on podcast, plus the whole show. I appreciate all of you who are out there listening, especially the hardworking people who tweeted at me, working as a machinist, working at UPS, working in the U.S. Forestry Department, landscape designers. If you're listening to this radio show, Portland to Eugene, And as of the 1st of August, Klamath Falls. Klamath Falls is coming on 1st of August. So all those people out in Klamath Falls that were clamoring for the BFT radio show, you join Eugene on the BFT radio network effective August the 1st. It'll be KLAD AM and FM in Klamath Falls. It's the ESPN affiliate there in Klamath Falls. I want to welcome them to the network. You're listening to the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show. Whether you're listening on Fox Sports Eugene or on the game at 102.9 and 750 in Portland, I appreciate that you make us part of your day. Leave it right here. Great programming ahead.